Hey everybody, welcome to episode 77 of Breaking In. I'm Manny.
I'm Cheryl.
So I feel like we have actually a lot to talk about today. Kind of all over the board. I wasn't exactly sure where to start. And I thought that the best way to start with all of the things I wanted to go through is start at the most recent thing that we just did. And, you know, there was an interesting...
You're gonna do that.
to talk about...
Yeah,
it's going to happen. There was an interesting conversation that I overheard, and we sort of briefly talked about. There was a conversation between Bret Easton Ellis, who has his own podcast, and he was interviewing Kevin Smith, and they were having a discussion about the fact that movies are completely disposable. That, you know, for... When it's all said and done, we spend 6 months to a year writing a script.
Mm-hmm.
We spend another year or so, hopefully.
Getting money. Getting people on board.
You spend another couple of months filming it. You spend another... And then it all boils down to this brief release.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's done. And nobody gives a shit anymore.
Right.
And you always have that thing in your hand... Where it's like, I made a movie and this is my movie,
mm-hmm.
but once it's come and gone,
it's kind of funny seeing the Louis C.K. Interview about his movie that came out that he made 10 fucking years ago.
Yeah, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. For him to look at to go, holy shit, I was so passionate about this and I wanted to make this and I begged people for money and I made it and blah blah blah, and that was it.
That was it.
It was done, and now it's getting only because he's famous. Now he gets to put it out. That's horrible.
Well, and what's interesting, the conversation when I was listening to it actually sort of bummed me out because it does present a certain reality to our world where it's kind of depressing that we put so much effort into creation that we. But it doesn't matter. I mean, in the grand scheme of things,
you get no wow at the end. There's no dun da da da.
Why? Well, okay.
But you finish it. It's an accomplishment. That's it, I think.
But yet it's not. I mean, it is.
Why? Does somebody have to see it to know that you accomplished it?
Yeah, I mean, what's the point?
That's the point.
Okay. Otherwise. But, okay, so here's the thing. So that was a discussion, and it was sort of depressing, and... It kind of, there was a brief minute in time where I was like, oh my God, they're right. What the fuck are we doing? Why am I doing this?
Why? There's no immediate payoff to this.
And I will tell you why. And my mindset was immediately changed by the last movie we just watched. Because that is why we do this. For me. So we just got done watching Best Man Holiday. Now, I know that's... Like, I know all of you probably expected us to utter some cinematic classic. I fucking love The Best Man. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker. You know, I not to sound racist or anything, but it's a thing. I love black romantic comedies.
Yeah.
Like, all black cat... anything that Taye Diggs and Morris Chestnut does, I'm a fucking sucker.
I will watch anything
I know why
they do.
You want to watch it. But, I mean, it's, Deliver Us from Eva.
Right.
All of those movies.
Yeah.
Fucking love them. And of that core group of that genre, The Best Man is probably one of the best of those.
I agree.
So the sequel came out, and... I watched it the other day. Normally, I don't watch movies without you.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched this one the other day because it sort of directly is related to what I am working on right now. So research
mm-hmm.
for me.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, our lives are so wrapped up in ADD that it's very rare that you and I will actually sit down and watch a movie.
A full movie, yeah.
Well, no. We'll watch a movie, but we're always on our phones. Or
right.
We're sitting
cooking
there.
Cooking or blah, yeah. blah, blah. Yeah, yeah.
I, for the first time in a very long time, I sat down and watched a movie. Mm-hmm. No video games.
On your own.
No iPad.
This was one you watched on your
right,
own.
Right,
right.
And I'm not even ashamed to say this. Fucking bawled my eyes out at the end of this movie. And So when I watched it again with you, I already knew the ups and downs and the emotional turns. Mm-hmm. Still got teary-eyed.
Yeah.
And there, that is, the fact that this sort of, to use the phrase that they used, this disposable product created such an emotion in a person.
Okay, let's talk about that, because I felt like it was a really smart writer cheat. It was a really smart writer cheat, because literally it encompassed everybody's boohoo thing, you know, moms, your wife, your children, mm-hmm. Best friend. It literally had every, like, I always get emotional, anything over a kid. If there's yeah. something going on with a kid, I'm either not watching the movie,
right.
or I'm going to be blowing my eyes out.
Right.
And this hit on all of the things that people have about.
And there was, I mean.
So is that a cheat? Is that a cheat that you just like stack every sad thing you could ever think of into the movie?
It's not a cheat. It's a manipulation.
Yeah. I agree. Brilliant. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know.
Write that shit in. Yeah.
It's not as. Okay. So when the movie ended, I told you it's not as fun as the first one, but it's still really fucking good. And. For the record, we actually watched The Best Man before Best Man Holiday, because right. you didn't really remember the first one, because it had been years.
Yeah.
The best, for me, sadly, The Best Man is one of those movies that I will watch like every 6 months. That's a movie that
If it's on, I don't change. Absolutely. It's one of those movies.
No.
It comes
not,
on.
No. It's not a, for me, it's not a, if it's on.
You
it's
go
a,
pick it.
Yeah. It's a legitimate choice.
Yeah.
I have to watch this like every 6 months.
That's cool.
Which is funny, because I'm way more into that movie than like, I think the top three. Actually, I'm going to say top four romantic comedies for me are When Harry Met Sally, Love Actually, Notting Hill, and About a Boy. And those are fucking genius, but I do not watch those. Like I physically can't watch When Harry Met Sally again. I've seen it so many times.
No, I agree.
But it doesn't matter how many times I've seen The Best Man. I mean, if we were flipping through the channels right now and When Harry Met Sally was on, I'd be like, oh, look, When Harry Met Sally's were on. Okay, so 16 and pregnant? I would gloss right over it.
Pass.
No,
it was totally a... and I do not cry easily.
I know.
I do not cry easily.
Yeah.
And literally, it was kind of all through the movie. It wasn't just the end for me. It was definitely all through.
And yes, there was...
And there's something about... This is so racist, too. I don't know why I expect to see white men cry. I don't know why I expect to see that. Or I'm okay with it, or it doesn't affect me the same way. Seeing a very large black man cry is heartbreaking to me.
There's a scene, and this is the scene that gets me every time. Well, every time as in twice.
but that's every time.
But there's a scene where there's actually, oh, I'm sorry, there's two scenes. There's one scene specifically with Taye Diggs where he doesn't lose it. The acting is so fucking brilliant in these movies.
Seriously.
There's a specific scene where he has to non-verbally give up pride because he needs money.
Right. I know that was one. That was a moment for you. Yeah, I get that.
That fucking hurt. The way and the thing about it is that I've done it where it's like I have to look away. Like, okay, so do you need money? And he does this moment where he has to look away and
I
nod.
Can't even look you in
I
the
can't
eye.
Even look at, like, yes, I can't look you in the eye. And as he turns away, tear rolling down the cheek.
Yeah.
And then the And I can't.
Yeah, the
verbally...
shaking, the nodding of the head of, yeah, I need some money. Yeah.
And then that gets me. And then there's the other scene is Morris Chestnut, man. It's a fucking phenomenal actor. I think he's kind of underrated, but.
Why is he not in. I know. I was like, I don't.
There's a scene where he breaks down.
Yeah.
And that's the part where
his
actually
his whole everything.
No, but
the whole thing.
Watching him do that.
Yeah.
And him breaking down is what gets me emotionally. Yeah. Like that's when I start.
Yeah.
Crying, like that's. Oh, I'm sorry. My and allergies affect my eyes.
There is a large black man that is totally broken down over something emotional, and this kills me. Yes, I get it. Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. So it was. Wow.
I told you it wasn't going to be. It wasn't going to be fun.
I mean, it was actually like a almost another version of. The group that gets together after somebody dies, commits suicide, one of their friends commits suicide.
The Big Chill.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Manny. You're so good at that.
I know.
It reminded me of that kind of old friend, like people coming back together.
Well, and actually that's actually a really good point, because that was something else I forgot about, so thank you. What's interesting is that as much of a romantic comedy as this is, it's still a contained romantic comedy. It's them all getting together at the house over Christmas.
Right.
And so
the majority
95% of
is in one house.
Is in the house.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant.
It totally is. I mean, you have a little, if you think about it, the excerpts of like them heading there or whatever,
mm-hmm.
like literally it's a street shot.
Mm-hmm.
It could be shot anywhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. No, that's totally smart. Probably the most that they spent on that was the last hotel. The hotel for the wedding.
No, that was the first one.
Right. Oh, they didn't have a lot of expense. So it was just one person's house.
The most expense that they had was filming the football scenes.
Oh, right.
Because they actually needed the stadium and the crowd and
all that
shit. But I mean, good fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so moving on. Okay, so I actually, I'm kind of sort of looking back on this now, and I'm a little disappointed that we didn't do this together, and it wasn't sort of my intention to do this on my own,
mm-hmm.
I just kind of fell into it, but I actually did an experiment this week, which ended up being absolutely fucking fascinating. So, little backstory, I watched Chinatown this week. Now, I've seen Chinatown when I was, I'm going to say I was probably 20 or 21, so 15 years ago.
Okay.
I watched Chinatown because I was determined during one summer that I was going to watch the AFI 100. I was going to watch all the 100 movies on the AFI list. And my mentality at that point was so fucking, I hated. Like, oh my God, I'm going to have to get through this. Like, this is back before I even liked Woody Allen. So the fact that I had to sit through Annie Hall was brutal to me.
Oh, that's funny.
So there are certain movies where I can honestly tell you that I've seen Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't fucking tell you a single, like, it was just on.
Uh-huh.
That was a thing that happened, but I was not paying attention. Chinatown, at that time, for me, was such a slow, boring fucking movie. Now, I haven't seen Chinatown since that moment 15 years ago. So I decided this week that I was going to sit down and I was going to watch Chinatown because, okay, I'm older.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give it another shot. It's a classic. It's hailed as probably one of the greatest scripts, one of the top 10 greatest scripts of all time. So I started the movie and I was like, you know what? I actually have the script. So how about I pull the script out and I'll read along with the movie?
Right.
This turned into probably about a 3 to 4 hour amazing fucking experience as a writer, as a movie person. Anybody who's listening and wants to do this, you can find the Chinatown script online. It's out there. I highly suggest you do it. If you want to learn how to write, Not only if you want to learn how to write, but you also want to learn how to edit. That was the thing I found fascinating.
The tweaking.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think it's it's an obvious statement that when you get on the day of actually shooting a scene and you get actors into a space, things are going to change based on what they're
on the fly.
Yeah. But what's interesting is that Chinatown is so well written that you can actually see the difference between the script and what happens on the screen. Is you can learn so much.
It's a matter of two words being changed in order in the same sense. It's all the same words.
Yeah.
All the same words, but you're just changing the
order. Well, and there was a character thing that I thought was fascinating where, okay, so apparently, obviously, Jack Nicholson is going to make choices because this is his character.
Right.
And so some of the things that he said, so like, for example, it's very small things, which I thought was fascinating. So going to became gonna, or, you know, he did, it's essentially a film
so
noir.
So in the script, it said going to. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. There was a line, and it was a fucking simple line. So the line was, in the script,
this is the one you're talking about. That's a pretty dress.
No. Well, this same scene. Mm-hmm. Same scene. Mm-hmm. There. So Faye Dunaway has just got interviewed by the police. They found the husband's body, and so Jack Nicholson's character is there, and he says, "Gonna walk her to her car. I'll be right back," mm-hmm. because the police still want to ask him questions. Right. Well, in the script, it says, "I'm going to walk her to her car. I'll be right back."
All proper.
And then the line that he actually delivers is,
"Gonna walk her to her car."
The car, which I thought was fascinating. Gonna walk her to the car.
Okay.
And then, comma Lou, because the lieutenant's name was Lou. Right. So I'm gonna walk her to the car, Lou.
Right.
I'll be right back.
Right.
And so the line you're talking about is, so in the script, it would see, it, which was fascinating. So in the script, and this happened a lot. It was always line of dialogue
and then insert name. Right, referencing the person.
So it was, "That's a really nice dress, Mrs. Mulray." But in the movie, it was, "Mrs. Mulray, that's a really nice dress." And I know that seems like such a minute thing, but if you actually say it out loud and say it in your head...
I see the difference in it.
What happens is that the characters in the movie actually use it as a punctuation.
Oh, right.
So it's, "Mrs. Mulray, that's a really nice dress."
Right.
There's a beat there where it's like, I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
There's a punch there that is utterly fascinating.
Yeah.
And, there were scenes where... Okay, so this is what happened. There's two things that actually happened that I thought was extremely amazing. So what I would do is I would get into a new scene. And for those of you who have seen the movie, it's a lot of Jack Nicholson's character, Jake, is a private detective. So there's a lot of running around, sitting, doing things, no dialogue. He's
right.
Following her,
right.
Seeing things. So in the script, it's pages and pages.
Oh, just like a book. Yeah, literally, exactly. Just reading a book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so what I would do is I would hit pause on the movie, read three pages ahead of action, 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 until it got to the next dialogue scene. Then I would hit play and see how the movie compared to what the script was.
Right.
Then, when it got to the dialogue, I would literally sit there and read along. Because, mm-hmm. And here's another thing that's... Very rarely does this happen, where you're reading the script and it's verbatim what is happening on the screen, with the exception of the minor changes that I just said.
Don't you think that might have been more the case back then than it is
probably
now?
Yeah. Probably. So while I'm reading dialogue and I saw changes, that's when I would pause the movie... And try to find, okay, wait a minute. So this scene and this scene were two separate scenes, but they decided to smash the dialogue together and make it one scene.
Mm-hmm.
So in the script, it was two scenes. In the movie, it was one. And so they took dialogue from this scene and put it into this place.
Interesting. So you got to see what they decided to...
How they...
Does it make sense? Did it make sense to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and it goes back to editing. So reading the script, it allowed you to understand how to become more efficient as a screenwriter, where, okay, this is the information that I need to tell the audience, and here's how to do it. Now, here's how I did it on the page, and obviously the page sold, and that was fucking phenomenal.
Right.
But here's how the movie decided to make that page better. And so, yeah,
it made sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing is, so going back to the block-heavy action, the book
part of it.
The book part of it. What's really amazing is the level of detail that gets put into. Okay, so
there's I'm laughing about that because I know that you and I have talked about when there's too much detail in an actual book.
Well,
don't tell me what the walls look like. What do I give a shit?
Unless
something's coming out of the wall.
Okay, this is what's funny. Okay.
Okay.
So specifically. There's a scene where Jake finds out that a homeless guy got killed. And so he goes out, and this homeless guy lived under this bridge. So he goes to the under the bridge to investigate this guy's life. Okay?
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I tell you all the time, not too much detail.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So the script gives you no detail, yet very specific details. I know this is fucking weird, but hear me out. So he goes under the bridge, and he generally just describes it's a homeless guy's paradise.
Okay.
Boom.
That's it.
And then he says specifically that there is a sign that says, it's a sign that was like, okay, so you know when you go by a commercial building that's empty and you see the sign that says office space for rent,
call this number? Yeah.
There's a sign in this guy's lair that says that. Now, it doesn't matter to the story at all.
Okay.
But he just threw that in there. In the fucking movie, that sign is there. They created that sign and they put that there. It doesn't matter to the scene. It's not a clue. It doesn't relate to the story at all.
I don't even understand that. Why?
There's another scene where he's following Mulray, and Mulray goes to the beach, and he's walking along the beach, and he's investigating the water thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, spoiler alert, Chinatown's all about water in Los Angeles.
Okay, spoiler alert. Is it how old movie?
I know, right? Stop. It's like 40 years old.
Yeah.
In the script, it says that Mulray picks up a starfish and brushes the sand off and then tosses it to the side. There is no, it doesn't matter to the story, there's no thing, but in the movie, he fucking picks up a starfish, brushes it off,
and tosses it to the side. And what do you think about when you see that? What comes to your head? When you see scenes like that and you go, what the fuck?
Okay, okay.
Don't you say, what the fuck? No?
So if I'm watching the movie for the first time and I'm not thinking about the script, then the answer is, well, he's just investigating the shoreline. He's investigating the water.
Investigating the starfish. Come on.
Okay.
Come on.
He's investigating
whatever.
The shore.
Yeah, okay.
Sure, fine.
All right.
Okay, but when I read the script and watch the movie, it's like, why are we doing this? I don't even understand.
I feel like this is, is there supposed to be some big meaning behind this that I'm not getting because I'm not deep enough?
Or is it
just bullshit in the script?
No, and this
and
is
why
the,
we
this,
keeping it?
This is the funny thing. If you were to watch Chinatown right now and you were to watch that scene and you saw the starfish scene without me telling you what I just told you,
I wouldn't think twice about it?
Absolutely.
Bullshit, Manny. You know I pick on things. I pick on things in the background of movies.
Yeah, I promise you. It's just a throwaway. It's something to give the actor to do while he's on the thing. This is
we got time to kill, right? We got time to kill.
No, it's not about. It's giving the actor something to do. When I was in film school, there was a scene that I had written where it was two people having a conversation at a restaurant, and the in the script, it was dialogue heavy. It was just the conversation, because that scene needed to happen, because it turns into them having a fight.
Right.
So when I sat down with my
I don't know where you're going with this.
Yeah. So when I sat down with my screenwriting advisor, and we talked about that scene specifically, she's like, give them something to do. Hand them menus. Have them look through the menu. Have them
play with a salt shaker, stack sugar packet, whatever.
Right. Yeah. So the sand. But what's interesting, it's just interesting to actually read that minute of a detail in a script where the script is not detailed heavy. I mean, there's a lot of it doesn't, when I read the script, it doesn't build the world. When I read the script, I don't think 19...
There's blue trim, there's the rough carpet is this color. And I don't...
The script does not read 1940s Los Angeles.
Okay.
I don't get put into that world. Obviously, I get put in that world when I'm watching the movie and reading the script.
Right.
But
it could be... That could be adapted, probably. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, If I read Chinatown today without knowing that Chinatown existed, it's just a femme fatale film noir murder mystery. Right. It could happen right now.
Sure.
There's nothing. There's nothing in the script at all.
Just a hit back for scripts that could be updated that we'd like to see again, as opposed to Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Fuck that! No one is allowed to remake Chinatown.
Reboot.
Well, you know, here's the thing about go ahead.
I want to say your original, and you got off point because I know where you were originally going with this. Is you're watching this movie because you're writing a very dialogue heavy script. So you're more of an action man. So you're watching scripts now that are almost purely dialogue, basically.
Well, yeah. I mean, this week I got back into Woody Allen, which I haven't done in a while, and
those are heavy dialogue movies.
I will say specifically that Woody Allen. Is the king of dialogue, period. Quentin Tarantino is great. Woody Allen's the king of dialogue. Kevin Smith is great. Woody Allen's the king of dialogue. I watched a Coen Brothers movie, too. I watched Barton Fink, which I hadn't seen. I don't think I've ever seen all the way through. And when you sit down and you watch a Woody Allen movie... And, you know, I know there was a lot of drama that came out this week about him, but whatever. But when you sit down and you watch...
And wait a minute, what just drama listen came out about
characters,
who? What?
I don't even want to go there because you're going to argue the point. But the daughter and the kid, his kids that he's
has
separated
now?
From.
Oh, okay.
No, Mia's kids.
Okay.
Started with their shit again because he got props at the Golden Globes. So now they're publicly saying shit that they said 20 years ago that...
He had a relationship with all of them?
Yeah.
Not just the one he married? He also had relations with the other kids that are not his kids, but it's okay, so whatever. Okay.
Yeah, check your facts. Anyway, that's why I don't want to get into this
conversation. I know. We're done. Moving on. That's it.
But, okay, so going back to the dialogue, I mean, you sit there and you listen to the words... I mean, at one point, I literally laid in bed, I put Manhattan on, and I closed my eyes. I've seen the movie so many times
you didn't see that.
Yeah, and just listening to the patterns and the words and the verbiage and the vocabulary is fucking
cadence.
Amazing. Yes.
Cadence. He's very big on cadence, like how people, it's very bump, bump, bump.
Right.
Kind of.
Yes. And the jokes that, you know, I watched a couple of the early funny ones, and the jokes are just so fucking smart.
Right.
And the only way those jokes can be funny is the way that, I mean, he's just a master of what he does, and there's not anyone else that can do that.
Right.
Anyway, so yes, I'm doing a movie I'm writing something right now that's very dialogue heavy. And so I've been focused on truly, purely dialogue-driven movies.
Right. Well, I'm curious to see because I have not seen any, read any of yours. So
yes, you have. the old rom-com that I was going to say.
I mean, what you're working on
now. You haven't read anything.
Yeah. What you're working on now. That is very dialogue heavy. So it's your, now your new current stuff for dialogue.
Yeah, it's not fun.
It's so funny because previously I remember you saying, oh yeah, there's dialogue in there, and I just said some shit and you'd redo it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was like, eh, I just went out to the action and I wrote that and you do that and blah, blah, blah.
Here's
like,
you
don't even care. It's, and it's funny. When I read it, you know, I make fun of you as soon as I read it.
Oh yeah. Here's the fascinating thing about writing a dialogue driven movie. When you don't have a lot of action, you're like, writing action is really hard because it's block text.
Right.
Writing dialogue is really hard because every word is pretty much precious. Like, you have, like, the characters, if they're opening their mouth, they have to be saying something worth saying.
Right.
But what's great about writing dialogue is that you can easily write 10 pages in like 30 minutes because it's just dialogue.
I know, and it takes up so much space, right?
Exactly. It takes up so much space. But when you write action, it's like, I wrote for 3 hours today, and I only got a quarter of a page done.
I know, that's funny, right? Yeah, weird. Sucks. I didn't think about that before. That makes sense, though.
I think you
have trouble with is putting yourself, is getting your head in the situation as if you're there. Let's pretend you're there, and what would be said, and does that, you
know? One of the things that's great about this movie specifically is that I have found ways to bring in true stories.
Right.
So there are
it's helpful.
Yeah, there are situations where it's literally verbatim discussions or events that you and I had, or there's specific things that happened to my mom when I was a kid. There's just things there that, like, man, this is how it happened. So.
Which makes it easier to make it realistic.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than putting bullshit in that you're like, nobody says that. Why would you say that? Yeah.
Right. And then not only putting in things that actually happened, but make them relevant to the story. Right. Weaving them in.
Right.
The last thing I want to say about the Chinatown thing is that, we've said it before on the podcast. It is publicly known on the internet, but it's often said that one page of script equals 1 minute of film.
I actually found this as a programmer. Okay,
this is kind of really stupid. I actually took notes, so not only was I reading and watching the movie, but I took notes because I knew I was going to talk about it on the show. And then I traded my phone in this week, and my notes got erased. But one of the things that I was doing was I was actually keeping track of page count. So every 20 or 30 minutes into this project, I would just make a note. Okay, I'd pause the movie, see what the time was, and see what page I was on the script.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a moment where the movie, I think, was like 2 minutes ahead. So if I was at the 30-minute mark, I would be on page 28. Like 28.
Right.
And then something happened somewhere near the middle where a couple of scenes got changed around.
And combined. Combined.
Yeah, or, and the script caught up to the movie.
Right.
So then it was, I'm on page 98, but the movie was at like the 96-minute mark.
Okay.
At the end, as the credits are rolling, the final tally was 127 minutes. Now, actually, I take that back. The final tally was 129 minutes. The script is 127 pages. I went back to double check because Chinatown is an old school movie.
Uh-huh.
So they do that whole credits all up front.
Right.
And then just the end as he's walking off into Chinatown.
Gotcha.
So I went back to double check what the count was for the credits. 1:58 exactly. So the movie starts at the 1:58 mark, ends at the 1 minute. The 129-minute mark, which means the movie is 127 minutes long, script is 127 pages exactly.
That's so weird.
And I'm like,
I don't even, that doesn't even make sense to me because one page could be action, or half action, half vocabulary.
It's so fucking weird. It was so weird. And you know, as many times as we have read scripts, as many times as we've watched movies, as many times as we watched read scripts and then watched the movie,
right.
I can't believe that there is there has literally never been a time where I've done this, where I sat down with the script in my hand.
Well, we just took it. Somebody said that's what it is, so you just assume, well, somebody did.
Fascinating. It's
somebody's already done that before.
It's
so.
Truly a fascinating experience, yeah, and funny. I highly recommend any of you to do this and do it with Chinatown or do it with another movie or whatever.
Short movie I would recommend.
But I promise you, Chinatown is, you know, okay, so. The one other thing that I do want to say about Chinatown is a movie like, I don't want to say that I hated it 15 years ago, but I just wasn't into it.
Right.
This time, fucking amazing. That's a really good movie.
Obviously, your taste changed. You probably didn't like certain foods either 15 years ago, so that.
Yeah.
You have to.
I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like.
Yeah.
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 You, I don't know if that's a movie that people watch and get right away. I don't know if that's a I mean it's a political thriller. There's a lot of boring moments.
Right.
Oh, okay. So one thing, my favorite line from the movie is the scene where Jake gets his nose cut, and so he's investigating the water thing at night. And big guy, short guy shows up. And short guy sticks, which is played by Roman Polanski, the director, sticks a knife in his nose, and that's how he gets his nose
cut.
Right. Which, by the way, tangent real quick, props to Jack Nicholson for essentially spending the whole movie disfigured. Like, he's got bandages on his nose.
Right.
That's not typically an actor thing.
No.
But that was the scene,
pretty early on in his career, too.
The scene plays out exactly how it's written on the page, verbatim, every single line, with the exception of the joke that Nicholson says at the beginning of the scene, which is, hey, Claude, who brought the midget? Where'd you find the midget?
Uh-huh.
Referencing Polanski, because Polanski's shorter than bad guy. It's this, if any time Chinatown is ever shown at the Oscars, or that's the clip that gets shown,
right?
One line that's not in the script. So Nicholson had to either ad-lib that on the set, or
my
gut instinct is that Nicholson went to Polanski and said, look, I can't just have them come and cut my nose. I gotta say something snarky.
Right.
I gotta be a tough guy.
Instigate.
Yeah. That makes the most sense to me, and if I'm ever fortunate enough to be in a room with Jack Nicholson, that's the one question I'm going to ask him.
Out of all list of those,
him being the Joker, is the one question. Like, so really, what happened? How did you come up with that line?
Yeah,
one line that's not in the script. Everything most everything else.
Well,
it'd
be really sad if he says, "Oh, I didn't do that."
Oh, I know.
Then you're gonna feel like an idiot. So I wouldn't ask that question, personally.
So anyway, really good experience, and I highly suggest any of you newbie writers to do that.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So another thing that's kind of going on with us right now is we have a lot. Actually, it's fair to say that we have a lot going on. I have a meeting tomorrow. You have a meeting tomorrow too, which is going to lead into some other things that are happening at the end of the week.
Yep.
And we're not necessarily going to go into detail per se until everything is sort of locked down. But suffice to say that there are things happening with this sort of music event.
Yeah, I know. It's
And you know, I I want to use that as a jumping off point and a segue to continue the discussion that we had last week about moving to Hollywood. One of the things about being out here, and sort of, I think probably one of the best things that we could give in terms of advice, is being open to opportunities that
come out of nowhere. You didn't set it up. It just happened.
And you have to be able to recognize the fact that you're not going to come out here and you're not going to be a screenwriter right off the bat. You're going to have to find other things to do. And you might find yourself in a situation where you're doing something that you did not plan on doing, But, you know, it pays the bills or...
Right, absolutely. It's not McDonald's.
Yeah, and you know, even though everybody wants to be a screenwriter and everybody wants to be a successful screenwriter...
Or an actor still, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, it still boils down to the fact there is one thing, one driving force that has to happen when you move out here. And I'm only saying this based on my current situation, which I will get into more in a minute, is... When you come out here, the only goal that you should have in your brain is staying out here.
Like, and how do you make that happen?
And how do you make that happen?
Not that we're saying go be a hooker on Highland, but, you know, it's a month, almost sometimes a month-to-month thing where I can stay, I have a place to live for another month. You know what I mean?
Again, more on that in a second. Yes, the reality is that even though we all want to be successful screenwriters, that might not necessarily
be the path. You got to do other things.
And I can also say that not only will you have to do other things, but you actually might find happiness in like, oh, you know what? As much as I like screenwriting, this actually fulfills me
too.
And you kind of end up doing that. And it doesn't mean
that doesn't happen for everybody, Manny.
No. It's a possibility.
Okay, yes, absolutely a possibility. But no, this is just a fortunate coincidence for me.
I'm referring specifically to what I'm referring to is that I came out here to be a screenwriter, and then through luck and happenstance, I sort of ended up in the development game. And the producing side of things, and one of the meetings that I have tomorrow is with a producer, and I actually really like that.
Okay. What I'm saying is that you just referenced a music thing that's coming up, and hence jobs that may not be what you're looking for, but you're okay with doing them. So that's why I'm saying that.
The moral of that story is that you just have to be open to other opportunities and realize that there's a multitude of possibilities out here. And
much like a million ways into the business, there's a million ways into any business. Right. You know what I mean? It's
So I don't know. Is there anything else?
I thought it was an interesting story how we ended up possibly having our next job gig kind of thing.
Go for it.
Okay. I was walking back from lunch back here, and somebody stopped me and asked me for a light. And in talking with the person... he's promoting a charity concert in Long Beach. I said, my daughter was a graphic artist. He needed somebody to do that. Oh, totally cool. She'll do that, blah, blah, blah. Started talking. And now you may get involved in it and handle some of it, which is a job. Definitely Allie's going to handle some of it, and that's a job. So it's just it wouldn't have happened if I didn't live here.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean?
I can't be in Wisconsin like that happen. Absolutely. So, and that shit happens here all the time. We talk about that being a oh my God moment in Hollywood. I was working at a restaurant and so-and-so came in.
Right. And you got to be, you have to seize the opportunities when the opportunities arise, or else you're completely fucked.
Right.
I
mean, right.
That's the.
It turned out not to be a scam. As much as we were like, this is very suspicious. But turns out not to be a scam. So, yeah, we're totally doing that, too. Has nothing to do with what we do, but...
Right.
That's fine.
There's actually one other thing that sort of happened this week, specifically last night, that I think it's really kind of interesting, and... You know, one of the things about being a writer and coming out to Hollywood is I think there's a lot of arrogance attached to it. I mean, we as writers are sort of gods in our own world.
I know you are, but I... yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, so the... Never mind. Not gonna say it. Anyway. don't be arrogant.
Yeah, that's
probably
go.
What.
There you go. Don't be a know-it-all.
Yeah. And actually, okay. So let me continue that thought with, there are, not only should you be open to opportunities, you should be open to ideas and people, and you should recognize that you're not the end-all be-all of your world, that other people are either going to help you or they're going to give you motivation, or they're going to give you ideas that expand beyond and make you think outside of the box.
It is most certainly going to act, your writing is going to be enhanced from knowing more about everybody.
Exactly.
As many people as you can find out about, it's going to enhance your writing.
So I just want to say on the air, thank you. When I came out here, I was not, I was adamant that I would never have a writing partner. Nobody knows more about this than I do. That is not the case.
Yeah, you're pretty shitty about your scripts in the beginning.
Yeah. That is not the case. I'm very lucky to be able to write with you. You're extremely talented, and you take my scripts and you, or actually not even my scripts, you take my ideas and you raise the bar and make me think outside of the box. And I appreciate that. So
thank you.
And you know, this show is something that, you know, I wanted to do a podcast back when podcasts first started. And nobody was supportive of that. Like, I felt like I was that
guy. Yeah, I remember you telling me about this conversation about years and years ago.
Like when podcasts started, back in the day when like blogs were a thing.
Okay.
It was like, so I think we should do a podcast. And they're like, yeah, what's that? I'm like, internet radio. Nah, that sounds stupid. Like, nobody.
That's never going to take off.
I always wanted to do this, and I, even knowing you, I talked about it for like 3 years before we even made it happen.
Yes, I remember.
And so the fact that we're doing this together, I always look forward to this, and I appreciate it.
Me too. I like doing it.
So.
Oh, when do I not like talking, Manny?
I know. I know, but it's fun. And you are somebody that I know for a fact that somewhere in that beautiful brain of yours, you have a book inside of you. And when you get that book out, I am going to be extremely jealous, and I will hate you forever because I see it being on the bestseller list. I promise you, you have a book on you.
But I will let you put some cheese on that cracker. I'll pay for the extra cheese on that cracker.
I think you're extremely talented.
Thank you.
And I'm very lucky to have you as a partner.
Me too. Back at you.
Awesome. So, that being said, now that the dick-sucking fest is over.
Yeah, sorry about that. I tried to talk him out of it, but whatever.
Well, hey, it wasn't morose.
No, thank God.
It wasn't the maudlin version of, like, woe is me.
Oh, I would have slapped you. I would have hauled back.
You are the wind beneath my wings.
Slapped you.
All right, I think that's going to be it for this episode.
It is.
We're going to throw out... I just want to throw out right now that in February 16th is the DVD release of Chastity Bites. We are going to the party. When we're there, we're going to do a thing, once again, with them to promote the DVD. Actors are going to come on board. Most of the cast are going to be at the party, so we're going to be...
mingling with them.
Mingling, doing the networking thing, shaking hands and kissing babies. More on that. And again, as always, we are working on towards getting people involved and on the show. So hopefully we will,
we may have some very exciting guests coming up, actually.
Yes.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. Me too. So, all right, that's it for this week. I'm Manny.
I'm Cheryl.
Put some cheese in that cracker.
Peace out.
Oh, hey, one last thing. Sorry.
P.S.
Shitty about Philip Seymour Hoffman. Rest in peace. He was a good dude.
Oh, my God.
That was a tragic thing.
I loved him.
46 Such years old. Actor. That sucked. That being said.
Yeah, horrible.
Yeah. So don't put cheese on that cracker.
No.
I don't know.
But still, anyway. Peace out.
Peace out.